This is a download from BFM 89.9. The Business Station.
Good afternoon and welcome to the show. It's Meera Sivasodhi. MBA programs have sometimes been derided as trade school for smart people. Criticisms have ranged from the expense to the relevance of the programs. Some people may feel that the time working would help their career more than getting an advanced business degree. So what is the real relevance of an MBA today? Well, to shed more light on this, joining me, Professor Mark Shackleton, Associate Dean Postgraduate Studies from Lancaster University, together with Associate Professor Dr. Brian Imrie, who is the chair of the Global MBA program. They're going to tell me more. Welcome to the show, gentlemen. How are you today?
Yeah, very good, thank you.
Good, thank you. Good afternoon.
And Brian, I think I left it out. You're from Sunway University, actually.
That's right.
Okay, gentlemen, I just want to go into, you know, the both of you have an MBA yourselves. You just want to tell me why you felt, as an individual, you actually needed to embark on an MBA program. Because, I mean, Mark, if I look through, I mean, you have a degree in physics, am I correct? Yeah. And then you decided that an MBA was something relevant for you. Why?
Well, that's correct. So at the start of my educational experience, I wasn't exactly sure where my business career was going to lead me. And from my school tutors having encouraged me to carry on in a technical region, I ended up with a qualification in physics and then having to make a difficult leap into the business world. I was lucky, I was fortunate, I was able to do that in finance, but that was a very specific training and not really an all-round experience that allowed me to become a rounded manager.
So it's worked well for you?
Yes. So after gaining 4 years of work experience, MBAs typically require a minimum of 4 or 5 years work experience, I was able to get onto a program myself. And there I was exposed to many other candidates with very, very different skill sets. And the group and the process work that we went through was very formative in terms of me catching up on a lot of experience from others and seeing their passage through the corporate world. And really that's very informative in terms of then making your own decisions as to which corporate career path to follow yourself.
Mm-hmm. And so you made life-changing decisions after an MBA?
Yes, and often this involves a change of location for individuals and maybe even a change of location, national location, moving from one city to another or maybe from one country to another. And at the same time, an upheaval in terms of going from one business segment to another. So these programs can achieve a lot of transformational change for young aspiring managers.
Right. And what about yourself, Brian? I mean, you have an interesting journey yourself.
I mean, my pathway is towards an MBA is quite different than Mark. Mm-hmm. I'm a New Zealander by origin, and I actually was a retail banker.
Okay.
And essentially, the bank put me through the first stages of an MBA, and I fell in love with studying. And for me, that it not only led to some immediate impacts upon my leadership skills within the bank, and by the age of 27, I was a bank manager, but led actually to whetting my appetite for academia. So for me, it actually led to going on to do a PhD and getting into that sort of stream of work.
Right. So from a retail banker to an academician. Wow.
Yeah.
That is a transition indeed.
Yeah, and it wasn't a dream I had, because in New Zealand at that time, I had no family members who had ever been to university. So I don't have an undergraduate. Well, at that time, I didn't have an undergraduate degree. So I entered the MBA program based upon my leadership experience within the workplace.
Okay, and now that the both of you are attached to, you know, academic institutions, do you feel that the want or the need to pursue an MBA has actually declined? What's the story like at Lancaster University?
I think in European markets, in the UK context, and also in the US, the market for MBAs has become very mature, and the number of providers has increased, and a very high fraction of the universities in those regions now offer an MBA, and they want to be seen to be offering a premier and prestige product. So on the supply side, the dynamics are very, very competitive, and that's given candidates in these regions a lot of choice, and also some purchasing power in terms of keeping a downward pressure on prices. But the tensions that's created has been maybe a flight to quality and a focus in on the real prestige benefits of some of the best locations. But globally speaking, outside of those regions, I still think that the benefits of the MBA are being felt more widely and dispersing And I still think that this is a very, very valuable development tool for young aspiring middle managers in corporations everywhere else across the world.
I mean, we went through a global recession in 2008 or so. Did that sort of affect the number of people pursuing an MBA?
Yes, I think it did, but in strange ways. So one of the most immediate consequences of the financial crisis, for example, is that corporations then offer development opportunities to their staff inside the firm in order to facilitate their potential change and travel to other locations. So in fact, actually, in the very, very short term, we found that a lot of corporations were facilitating people's paths into different careers inside the organization or different careers outside of the organization. Now, that transition, I think, has been played out, and corporations are now thinking about a new steady state and they're hiring again. So the dynamics of the MBA market, if you like, for managerial talent changes, and it lags behind the crisis dynamics that we've seen in the global economy, but it's got its own pickup and it's coming back.
Okay, Brian, Sunway University has worked with Lancaster University for a long time now, and now you're collaborating on postgraduate studies courses, and MBA being one of them.
Sure.
Obviously, in Malaysia, you felt that there was a need for this, but you have MBA courses being offered all over. You can do it online. You can do it. You can even do it part-time. Everyone's jumping on the bandwagon of a business school. How different is this collaboration going to be?
Well, I think in the market there are a number of providers, and what makes it different about our MBA is that it has what we call a 3G framework: global delivery, global faculty, and global reputation. If I take the reputation one, there are very few MBAs within Malaysia which can claim to be triple accredited, and so this is this MBA we're bringing to the market is accredited by AACSB, Equus, and the Association of MBAs. All right, so these are accreditations spreading across America and Europe, giving credence to the business school, Lancaster University Management School, and also to the MBA program. And we've already made a mention earlier about rankings and how that this program is ranked amongst the best in the world and the best in Malaysia. In terms of faculty, we have global faculty. So we have a combination of Lancaster staff flying in, complemented by global faculty such as myself, who will be teaching into this program. So we get the strengths of Lancaster University and their excellence over time in terms of establishing a good MBA program with the context that Sunway and Sunway Group, because in terms of links to business. I think we assert that Sunway knows business best.
Yeah, and this program's actually, has it been launched already, Brian?
Yes, it was launched last month.
Mm-hmm.
We're looking to rapidly grow this program into a multiple stream program.
Okay. And earlier on, Mark, you said something about the market is mature in that side of the world. What did you mean by that? How would you define mature?
Well, I mean, if we went back 10, 15 years, then the business schools that dominated the rankings were principally US and European, and the UK schools were well represented. But the number of providers in this segment has increased dramatically, and a lot of schools from Asia, and in fact even the ASEAN countries here, have managed to make a mark and a presence in this global competition for MBA provision. So whereas the so-called Western schools have had this domain largely to themselves for an extended period of time, the effects of global competition are being felt in the business schools that teach about global competition.
Yes, they are, aren't they? Mm. And is that a worry for you, Brian?
Relative to the global competition?
Yes. To keep ahead, to make sure you're ahead. And who measures these rankings?
Well, the rankings that I was alluding to earlier, I think in terms of quality, there's the Economist, the Financial Times, and so on. And all these measures, the quality indicators we have with our collaborative partnership with Lancaster is that this will be the number one MBA within the nation. Given the difficulty of potential students to assess the quality of a program, I think these rankings are quite important in asserting that we have a quality product. And there's a whole range of criteria which go behind, and there was ongoing debate about the merits of some of the criteria. But when you get a collusion of rankings such as we have with our collaboration with the global MBA at Sunway, I think there's no doubt whatsoever that we have a quality product.
There is a world expectation for business schools to, you know, be much better than before. How would you compare MBA programs now as opposed to, you know, your father's MBA? Has it evolved over time?
Definitely. And the media organizations which effectively assess and scrutinize our programs, like The Economist and Forbes and the Financial Times magazines, in the rankings which they produce and which in that ranking space in which we have to compete, they are increasingly including ethical elements quite explicitly. Now, obviously, there's a debate about whether or not ethics can be taught, should be taught.
Exactly.
And that can be hazardous in itself, because working within any one particular ethical framework can be tricky. But actually, MBAs are now realizing that to be sustainable, they need to get their graduands to engage in a significant way with not just compliance, but issues of sustainability.
Right, exactly. Sustainability going forward, entrepreneurship, you know, all that talk about going beyond profits and things like that. Can that really be taught in an MBA program?
I think it can. By
really?
I think I think it depends on the experience that your graduates bring to the classroom. And I think if you can bring people into the classroom who have got good, positive stories and experience, and they can articulate the reasons why it's worth making that extra investment and not just taking the shortcut, then they can be the biggest advocates of ethical behavior and how that can be disseminated to others.
Right.
So you can let them do the articulation for you.
Just jump in to add to that, because I think just going back to your original question about what has changed with MBAs over time, but I think one constant has been the ability of good MBAs to apply knowledge to the work environment. All right, so contextualization.
Yeah.
And as time has passed and we have access to more technology, case-based teaching has remained a mainstay of MBAs. And it's evolved into technology in terms of simulations and so on. I know what we do in terms of our MBA is we have a very strong emphasis on reflection, right? So it's not just about learning and doing, but reflecting upon the wrongs and the rights, our strengths and our weaknesses. So I think the ethical aspects can be picked up and mentored by instructors in what is a very small class environment. So I don't think it entirely resolves the debate around can we teach ethics, but I think it's a good attempt at doing that. And I think I've seen some good results in that space.
Okay, and of course now, you know, we live in such a world where information is accessible. I mean, it's at your fingertips, really. So do these programs cut across different areas, such as does it cut across medicine, does it cut across for engineering, for an example? Are there overlaps? Do you bring that into MBA programs as well?
I think the easiest way to do that is to rely on the skill set of the people in the class. And if you can have a range of skills background in the class, and if you can actually get people working in groups which are multidisciplinary groups, then the candidates are able to share their information sets and share how best to use that information, because the information is out there more than we can ever consume in a lifetime. The question is, what do you look for and when and how? And by talking to others, you can learn from their context what is valuable from their information set and what a difference it can or can't make in your context.
In fact, I think a good MBA would be seeking diversity in a student in the way it designs.
Absolutely.
Who is in the class. So it's not just taking who turns up first on board, but by making some careful selections, the diversity in terms of industry, in terms of age and experience, So you get that diversity and that debate going on in the classroom.
So there are criteria.
Yes.
There are criteria.
When we come back, we'll find out more about what are the criteria that you would make the cut for this particular MBA program, coming up next on The Bigger Picture, BFM 89.9.
This is a download from BFM 89.9. The Business Station.
Good afternoon. It is The Bigger Picture and it's Meera Sivasodhi. We're discussing the relevance of an MBA with Professor Mark Shackleton. He's Associate Dean Postgraduate Studies from Lancaster University, together with Associate Professor Dr. Brian Imrie. He is Chair of the Global MBA Program at Sunway University. You know, earlier on we spoke about the criteria of being eligible to be a part of this program. Brian, what are some of the criteria?
You need to have a good undergraduate degree. So we prefer someone had at least a second class upper, a 2-1. You need to have a good level of proficiency in English. But most candidates in Malaysia, if they've done a degree in English, would qualify. Alternatively, we'd be looking for maybe an SPM result in English, so Cambridge O levels around C, and you need to have we prefer around 4 to 5 years of work experience.
You prefer, so it's not a criteria as such.
No, it is a criteria, but it's just a matter of we need to look at the quality of the experience. So we're looking at someone who has some level of sort of middle management experience, so they can take what they learn and apply it within their workplace.
And what are the stakes for a young person entering an MBA program?
The stakes.
Yeah.
You mean the price?
Yes. And, you know, and you know, how beneficial is that? And is age a criteria?
I mean, you talk about about stakes. I think the most important thing for someone to...
The most important
thing is time. Is actually what do they need to invest in terms of time? And we offer a 2-year part-time program. It has modules running every 5 to 6 weeks over extended weekends, mm-hmm. Thursday, Friday, and all day Saturday, all day Sunday. But it's more than that because there's a lot of self-study time, a lot of thinking time. And I think that's what really sets apart postgraduate studies generally, actually, I think, is undergraduate studies have drifted towards textbook-based teaching. A good MBA, such as what we're bringing to the market, will actually stimulate, encourage, and tease out, draw out those thinking capabilities of a candidate.
Okay.
So there is an investment in terms of opportunity cost because on those weekends, both when they're being instructed or when they're doing their assignments, they're having to surrender time to family and that would normally be spent with family and friends and enjoying life. But, of course, that investment will, at least we'd assert, yield great returns as they progress in their careers.
And what is the return on investment, really?
Well,
and these MBA programs don't come cheap.
That's absolutely true. I think the benefits that candidates can expect are increased flexibility and increased understanding of how their personal capital in terms of their ability to exploit a career and a wage in a certain sector, where that's best placed. It's not obvious when you start your career where your fortune is going to take you and where your skill set really is going to be optimized, and therefore the MBA opportunity provides a flexibility point to make a different decision to maybe the one that you made in your first point of entry. I think the MBA skills are skills for life, and the ability to analyze a situation the way a consultant would, and the ability to market your personal skill set one-on-one in a sales or consultant type of environment is a skill that will remain with every MBA candidate for the rest of their life. And so apart from offering candidates the opportunity for a career track inside a corporation or a leadership role inside a major corporation, I think that level of engagement with people as with their entrepreneurial skills is something that the MBA legacy will always leave with them.
What about employability, Brian? I mean, can you guarantee that, you know, you will be employed by good companies, you know, that sort of thing? I think very often, yeah, we pay the money, we don't mind investing in this, but some sort of guarantees that this really works. I mean, for an example, I know I'm pushing you in the deep end here, because if I give you an example, I mean, the Forbes 2011 rankings of the top 50 business schools shows that the investment in the MBA degree, including tuition as well as foregone salary, is typically paid back about 3.5 years. Mm-hmm. Can you say that? They're stumped.
in certain business segments, and for certain very specific career skills, you could absolutely support that. I think the days when an MBA was an almost immediate ticket to career advancement, enhancement, automatically, just because of those letters after your name, have gone. I think there are ways to achieve that automatic progression, but actually they're increasingly quite specialized. And so, for instance, in the financial sector, which I also know best from other program management, other programs that we manage, there are some quite specific qualifications which do achieve those very, very immediate aims and those very, very fast paybacks. I think you have to view the MBA as a more mature product, as I indicated before, and as something which is now more holistic and more integrative. And if you're looking for a very, very immediate career progression with something quite specific in mind, then the MBA may not achieve that for you directly. I think there may be certain certifications or certain qualifications within your sector that get you that immediate pay rise that you're looking for.
Did he answer my question, Brian?
Well, I'd like to answer in another way. I think that Mark is talking about, and I think your question actually was directing to, or encouraging towards answering it, about career progression within a large corporation, and I think that Malaysia is a nation of small to medium sized enterprises. Indeed, a lot of the inquiries I've had in regard to the program are coming from business owners who are wanting to expand their horizons. Those who have maybe done an undergraduate degree 20 years ago, and have had quite a successful business, and they want to self-actualize. They want to push themselves and their business to a new level. So it's not even about career progression. It's about them leaving a legacy. It's about them self-optimizing. And I think the facts bear it up, that a huge portion of our economy is made up of individuals just like this. So, and if we go back to the fundamentals of an MBA, which is, as I said, quite distinct from undergraduate study, it's about creating thinkers who are able to adapt and create in a dynamic world, right? And I think no one could question, we've never lived in a more dynamic business environment. An MBA is able, to those who really engage in the program, to create those benefits which they can then apply in their businesses.
If I'm an entrepreneur, I mean, I've been in the business for 20 over years now, and, you know, there are tons and tons of training programs out there, Brian. Mm-hmm. You and I know that. Mm-hmm. There are tons and tons of conferences happening all the time here in Malaysia. Mm-hmm. You pay for them. They probably cost a fraction of an MBA program. You go there. You listen to experiences. You pick up things and go home. So why should I bother with an MBA program?
I think an MBA is a key element in it is around this networking, right? So you've got these individuals who hopefully managed groups. So they're drawn from diverse backgrounds. They've got some engineers, you may have some medical practitioners, some bankers and so on, and some government employees, all bringing their different perspectives, all bringing a different take on life. And that mix-up in itself, when it's correctly mentored and encouraged, prompted by the facilitator the academic staff member, creates that new learning, which they are able then to apply within their entrepreneurial space.
How important is the facilitator?
I think the facilitator is very important. I'll just go one more thing about networks first of all. If you are fully engaged with your MBA cohort and the extended network, that gives you the phenomenal ability which some of the programs that you also mentioned wouldn't give you. And that is, within your alumni book, you can look for someone in your industry. You can look for someone maybe in a company you'd like to apply to. And within your MBA alumni network, you really will have the ability to email somebody cold. And because that person is part of your team, they will respond to you if you do it professionally. If you don't, then they may not, but they're gonna give you the time of day. And that's not something that you can really achieve outside of these networks. Mm-hmm. In terms of facilitation, I think it still ultimately is a very, very important part of the educational package. Education's changing and technology is becoming a lot more important to deliver at a distance. But the one thing that can never be replaced by technology is the role of the facilitator. The role of somebody to moderate and direct a discussion, to include people in the debate, and sometimes to exclude an opinion that's becoming overly expressed, is a very delicate one, but it's really ultimately the one that's most important in terms of discussing an issue and resolving an issue and getting to a point of decision.
Okay. And so physically, so I'm assuming then satellite campuses, online, you know, MBA programs,
right, so
are not going to have that facilitator feel.
Well, we're seeing that the educators are moving more to where the learners are. So the 80s, 90s, and the last 10 years have been seeing a transition from learners moving to where the educators are, to one where educators, I mean, I'm from the UK, Lancaster in the UK, but are now travelling in order to participate in education here in Malaysia and at a distance. So the academics and the educators are now moving to the engagement. Now, you can do that with technology and video conferencing to a degree, and expert facilitators can achieve a lot in a virtual space with technology. But at the end of the day, getting people around a table in a small room in a group environment where people can bang the table and, you know, spill their coffee and eyeball each other is a pretty irreplaceable experience.
Yeah. Mm. What about research? Where does that fall into an MBA program?
Well,
do we go on to do a PhD for that?
No. Well, our research falls in, obviously, in terms of the learning that takes place in the class. So it's informing what's being communicated as a base of learning, which then students go on to apply within the case-based learning method. But it also, in a good MBA, will conclude with a large research component. I think what's important is that we differentiate between the research output, which should happen in a good MBA, from a PhD. And a PhD is an academic piece of research looking for high-level learning outcomes that can be published in a journal article, for say. Right? Whereas an MBA, because it's very application-focused, it should be focused around a real problem within the workplace of the candidate. But using the rigor that's expected of a good piece of academic research. Mm-hmm. So it's staying true to the focus upon application.
Mark Lancaster has been carrying out this MBA program for a long time now.
Yes, that's right. So our program dates back to the early 90s.
How do you measure success?
Well, we don't measure it directly ourselves because we can't make comparisons with other people's programs. But the business media, who commentate upon the education game, both in the UK, in the US, and globally, they assess our programs on a range of criteria: diversity of intake, job achievement and career progression 3 to 5 years after MBA completion, the diversity of the faculty that are used to teach, and the research ranking and ratings of the faculty who are used to teach. And these are the metrics and the indicators which are used to determine program quality.
Right. So research takes into account job progression. What were the findings?
Well, the good news is that MBAs are expensive. Obviously, the fees are always out there as a potential issue. I think, as Brian alluded to, the key element that the candidate has to throw into the mix is their time, which is still the highest opportunity cost compared to the fee. But even in the tough competitive environment where the employers are dictating terms in terms of salary and salary progression, we still find that MBAs have better career progression than non-MBAs.
Okay, all right then.
But because not everyone will follow the corporate route, and because of the transformative nature.
Yeah, and like the both of you, you're good examples of how.
Yeah, and indeed yesterday I was talking with someone who is a Lancaster MBA graduate from the UK, and she was expressing how that she wasn't the run-of-the-mill MBA graduate who had made all the career progressions that she had seen with all her peers. So anecdotally, that's backing up the general claim of career progression. But she had gone the not-for-profit route and was able to apply those leadership skills in terms of civil society.
Mm-hmm. Mm. So it's sort of a time when you discover, self-discover as well, as an individual.
Yeah, definitely.
What did you find out when you pursued that MBA, Mark?
Well, I was coming from a sciences background, and I knew a few technical things. But in fact, one of the first things that my MBA did was do an analysis of my style and my role in groups. And then actually I discovered that although having had a technical training, one of my attributes in groups was to be the person who could put a new idea down on the table and motivate it and discuss it and defend it. Not to the death, and you know, I'm never going to sort of say, you know, it's this idea or nothing else, but actually the person who can introduce new ideas and change. And at the time, when I was still really on a technical track, I didn't really appreciate the benefit of that. But in my current role, especially when dealing with people and managing change, these skills in terms of moderating, facilitating my peers in groups as to how we move our management challenge on inside our management structures, these are skills which are very, very valuable, and they're actually really hard to teach from fresh. So you've got to inculcate whatever you find in candidates and help them bring that out.
Oh, I wouldn't agree with you more. I think managing people is the hardest thing to do on earth. What about yourself, Brian? Self-discovery?
Yes, it was. I gained a greater sense of being, I think, and I gained a confidence through the whole reflective process of the MBA. So in the MBA, you learn very quickly what are your strengths and what are your weaknesses, and you do hone those weaknesses such that they improve in terms of their performance. But we will always have some strengths and weaknesses, mm-hmm. and you learn also about the power of synergy by working with others. So through that process, if it's managed right, you gain this sense of being, this confidence, which then I was able to translate at that time I was working in the banking industry back into the leadership role I had in the workplace.
Right. So for those of us now who are, you know, fulfill the criteria to a certain extent, should we now run out and get an MBA? Mark?
I think you should think about that carefully for a period of time. And in fact, I think most people who eventually decide to embark on the journey of the MBA have been considering it for a period of time. I don't think there's a lot of impulsive decision-making in this area.
Because you need to be able to afford it now, first of all.
Absolutely, yeah. And it's a substantial undertaking in terms of your time and commitment. And it's not just something which is going to be gone in a month or a term or a semester, even in part-time mode. This is going to be a two-year undertaking. So we're looking for people who are seriously committed to this and have a durable attitude towards their own career progression. I think the corporate benefits are there for certain job functions and certain specialisms, but really the majority of the time over which you're going to derive a benefit from this is maybe going to be later in your career, maybe when you're outside a corporation and maybe working more entrepreneurially, or actually increasingly at a time when entrepreneurs have achieved the financial successes that they're looking for and they're looking to give something back. And the MBA can still help you give something back because you have got a bigger picture as to what the role of business is in the broader economy and society. And the idea that in the later stage of your entrepreneurial career, that your role is to encourage and develop others with your time and your skills and maybe with your financial capital. So it's going to be hard, but maybe you go online as a prospective MBA and you try and find a business angel who and you say to them, listen, I want to do an MBA, the fee's an impediment for me. And actually in an increasingly open funding world, you may find a business angel who will say, I would support you at somewhere in Lancaster.
Yep. Has that happened very much, Brian?
Well,
formerly this?
I mean, I haven't had any personal experience of that. Mark perhaps could comment further, but there are other sources of funding as well. I mean, even the government With my master's here in Malaysia, has some funding available. And candidates can also dip into their EPF account too as well to supplement any shortfall in funding they may have in their savings. But I think Mark's right to allude against this comparison against time and money spent. It's about value. And so the selection of the MBA and the commitment to the journey is really important when people ponder very carefully to engage in an MBA.
So you get the committed people when you know you're going to pay, you know, so much, and so much time has to come out of you.
Yeah. With the increased trends in longevity and in the retirement age increases that we're seeing in my domestic environment, I think it's important to realise that this is a long-term investment. And even if you're in the middle of your career, you might still have 30, 35, maybe 40 years work experience ahead of you. And I think when you consider the cost spread over that sort of time horizon, it helps put it in some perspective.
Yeah, it does. So all of that not quite written down on paper, but something to consider. How do we get in touch with you, Brian, in order to find out more or get more details?
Okay. We have a website, so it's sunway.edu.my/GMBA. So it's GMBA standing for Global MBA.
Okay, fantastic. Okay. Mark, what would you like to leave us with on the relevance of MBA?
Still an important part of the business world. It's evolving. MBAs can't ignore competition. We teach people about competition, and our space is competitive. The MBA landscape is being transformed by that competition, but the best MBAs are up for the global challenge.
Brian?
I think one closing comment I'd like to make is that when selecting an MBA, I think you need to consider flexibility and how it fits with your life. So, because there's all sorts of things that get thrown at us in terms of life, and so you need to actually ensure you select a program, if that's a journey for you at all, that is able to accommodate your lives.
Thank you very much for joining me, gentlemen.
Thank you. Thank you.
Professor Mark Shackleton, Associate Dean, Postgraduate Studies, Lancaster University, together with Associate Professor Dr. Brian Imrie, Chair of the Global MBA Program from Sunway University, on the relevance of an MBA on the Bigger Picture BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.